From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our movie this week, just in time for Christmas, is It's a Wonderful Life. My name is Serge Delpierre, and today we have...
Heidi Hilliker.
And...
Laura Thompson.
And most importantly...
Tim McMillan, who?
Our cue point for It's a Wonderful Life is the when you pop the DVD in, it's the very beginning, the first thing you see, which is the Liberty Films logo. So when that image starts coming up, because that logo comes up, dissolves in and dissolves into everything else, just when that image starts coming up, that's the one. I mean, it's still in black, and then when you hit play, and then it'll start, and that'll be the start point. So the idea is you cue it up to there. We'll count when we're ready to go. We'll count down 3, 2, 1, play. You'll hit play, and then you'll hear us in sync while you're maybe watching the movie, or you're running, or you're trimming the Christmas tree, or making some, or drinking some eggnog. That would be fun. So, anyway, It's a Wonderful Life.
Who's Liberty Films?
I guess they were one of the original producers of this way in the way back.
I don't recall many Liberty Films that I've seen.
I know. I think this belonged to Republic for a little while. I don't know. So, Tim, what's your experience with It's a Wonderful Life?
Perennial Christmas film through the years. I can't remember the first time I saw it.
Is this another one of those DNA ones?
Yeah, pretty much it just was there.
It's always
discovering it.
Yeah.
I just recall it always being there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had the same experience. It was just every Christmas time I watched this movie. I can't remember the first time I saw it, but it was definitely when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was just part of me.
Yeah. Hi.
I watch it about once a year. I usually watch it every Christmas, and I don't particularly remember the very first time that I watched it, but I know that my grandma and my grandpa actually introduced me to the film, and we used to watch it always at their house. And my grandma loved it. It was her absolute, I mean, definitely her favorite Christmas film, if not her favorite film ever. Mm. And she used to keep little bells around her house and throughout the year, just occasionally, you know, I mean, you never knew when it was coming. She would just pick up one of the little bells and ring it and tell us that an angel got its wings. And I mean, that's how much she loved it. So it always makes me think of my grandma.
Oh, well, that's sweet. Yeah. I think when I was a child, I don't remember it being on TV, but I think somewhere in the 70s, somehow they got a hold of it and started running it every year at Christmas, because I think it fell into the PD for a while, public domain.
I think they might have even started in the 60s that they started doing that.
But yeah. I have no memory. From there, I remember seeing Rudolph, all those things, and Frosty and that kind of thing, and Charlie Brown Christmas. But It's a Wonderful Life just seemed to pop up somewhere in the 70s and go like, oh, it's here. It's like, okay, start watching it. And they just watched it and watched it. And that's kind of, but it's kind of come back. And I try and watch it whenever it's on TV. So I kind of watch it like twice. If it's on, I'm like, I'm watching it again, because I just think for some reason there's a charm. Actually, when it first came out, it actually had a hard time getting an audience, because it was perceived as being very dark in terms of its tone.
Yeah, well, it was a box office disappointment, I think.
Though it was nominated for 5 Academy Awards.
Oh.
Yeah. Including, I think, Best Picture, Best Director. I can look really quickly while you talk.
I know this was Jimmy Stewart's first film after coming out of the military.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had to reinstate himself back into Hollywood, and he did it with this film.
What a good one to pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was not received
well
when it first came out.
Which
for whatever
is, I don't
reason.
Know. The fools. I don't know. My grandma always loved it. I assumed she always watched it her whole life, you know. I mean, not obviously pre-television. I'm sure she didn't watch it that often, but
I had heard it was regarded as too syrupy.
What?
That's interesting, because I don't think I'm definitely
the
ending is a little syrupy, but the whole thing, I think it's a great message. Man, watching this as a kid, I think it really did.
You can't be a cynic to watch this movie.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But you can, and it can, because I guess the whole point of it is to disprove your cynicism, you know, to bring some joy into the life of someone who thinks that they've run out of it.
As far as to really embrace the film is
to be
a cynic while watching it.
Yeah. So. And you always think that as you get older, you think the film's going to be too cheesy for you. You're like, oh, that was dumb. And then you watch, you're like, oh.
you're crying at
so
the end.
Good.
Oh, this, and it's brilliant.
This film does not age for me at all.
It does not
age in a bad way. And I don't feel any different. Every time I watch it, I see like a different little thing. And just the charm and the tightness. This script is awesome. I mean, it is tight. Everything counts. There is nothing. I can't think of anything that's wasteful.
And the message will never date.
Yeah, it's a wonderful life.
The humanity of it as far as appreciating.
Right.
Appreciating what you have. And also realizing that you don't have to be a war hero or travel the world in order to have a good life that impacts people and has a good effect on people.
Everyone experiences this film in their own life in some respect along the way.
Which
comes to the grips with the same things that are being weighed in this film.
Which is why I think it's a very hopeful film. I mean, I don't think it's cynical. I think something like, you know, there's other films that are awfully cynical. But
this, I didn't say this is cynical. No.
I'm saying personally, because I know, I don't know where I picked that up, that it could be seen as being cynical. But other films are cynical. But this is actually hopeful. But it is about exactly, you know, not seeing your life and not living up to your expectations, but still being able to accept that. And then it's all, you know, worked around the whole thing of Christmas.
Right.
Because Christmas time is a time of giving and sharing. And, obviously there's a religious connotations, which I'm not necessarily ascribing to this necessarily at the time, though it has been, you know, used to, I guess, share that sentiment and promote that sentiment of a oneness, of caring for, being a humanist, caring for humanity, caring for people.
And how many times has this exact same, you know, scenario been stolen in television or other movies? You know, like they try to tap into it a little bit, that idea of what would the world be like without you?
Right.
Right. But no one's ever done it as well as this.
Nope.
This pushes him to the wall. It pushes every single button. I mean, everything goes to crap in that alternate universe because he wasn't there. You know, but the brilliant thing is that it sets it up so well. I mean, the whole film is all set up. It's all set up for that whole alternate universe part.
Mm-hmm.
And it spends a good whatever hour plus. I mean, I can't remember timing it last time, but it's just a good time. Actually, going back to the Oscars.
Yeah, what'd you find?
What I found was this, this film from 1947. Or maybe it was the 47 Oscars. No, it's 46. It's 47 Oscars. So it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director for Frank Capra, Best Actor in a Leading Role, James Stewart, Best Film Editing, William Hornbeck, for all you editor geeks, and Best Sound Recording, John Alberg. So there you have it, five nominations, no Oscars. But
Jimmy Stewart.
It lives on.
He was fabulous in this. I would definitely think it should have been nominated for an Oscar if he hadn't been. He really throws himself into the role. I always, whenever I watch this, I'm always moved by his performance and the pain that he goes through in the alternate universe, and just the way that he's beautifully able to play the whole frustration mm-hmm. that George Bailey has throughout his life. It's not like overdone. It's just like always there.
And he's still likable.
Yeah.
I think you're on the journey with him because he never really goes to a place where you feel like you can't relate or you feel like he's a bad person. Or
he's just full of self-pity or anything like that. It's just a man who just never quite got what he wanted, and it's always there, but he's still a good guy.
Is this James Stewart's best role?
I think so. I would say so.
I'm trying to...
That's a hard one.
I mean, out of his body of work? I mean, that's a toughie because he's done so much great work.
So much work.
But this is one that's deeply associated with him. Absolutely.
I mean, I love so many films he's in. But I don't necessarily know if every film... I don't know. I just feel like this is him. You know, like, you're seeing something real and authentic, like something like deep from inside. Like, I feel like this is Jimmy Stewart. Like, if I met him, I would think he's this
man. He was George Bailey.
Yeah.
Or it's a great marriage of material with the actor in the sense that this material allowed him to show so many dimensions.
Right.
You know... I mean, the comedian and the dramatic actor and the dark. I mean, when he's, you know, when he that great shot where he runs up right up to the camera and just that look in his eyes when he realizes what's going on. He talks to Clarence. It's just awesome.
Also, the panic over the lost money, I think, is one of the best things I've ever seen Jimmy Stewart do.
Yeah.
The whole sequence of how it goes. I get so unnerved and uncomfortable during that sequence because it's more than I can take almost of, him realizing the money's gone and the guy lost it and the guy realizing he lost it and he's no good in life.
And again, the brilliance of his performance because you really do feel like you're him. You're with him.
You realize exactly the ramifications and how, you know, life is over at that moment for him. Just the sheer terror of it all.
And then going back to the whole thing that's all set up, because when you see that everything is gone and you see everything that he's lost, even though it was so dark, He has that chance to see what it would be like and everything that did not exist, including his children and, I mean, his marriage and just everything.
I will say this role, you said, is this his best role? Yeah. I will say this is a role that showcased so many sides of him in one film.
Right.
Right.
Compared to other films that he did. Vulnerability, panic, you know, the comedy, you name it, is probably the whole human experience is in this movie, in his character in
some
respects.
It's true. And he goes from being a young man to an older man, which so he gets to show the range of being, you know, young and naive and full of life and falling in love.
It's a challenging
and
role.
Disillusioned. So, yeah.
It's a challenging role for an actor.
It very well
film.
Could be his best performance.
And actually, you know, in terms of structure, obviously we got to get going, but we'll talk about this. But, you know, you have films that span years and it's never an easy thing to do. And this film actually manages to do it successfully and well to the point
from
we're
the
not
20s.
Going like,
to the 40s.
Yeah, we don't believe it. Yeah, exactly. So, okay. So on that note, we're going to get going.
Yay.
Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life again.
I thought we were done.
And it's time to go. Yeah. We have to watch the film first.
Oh,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Silly me.
Oh, in your mind, you watched it. Okay. So anyway, we're going to count down now. So 3, 2, 1, play.
Ding.
Ding dong. See, there's the Liberty Films. That's a bell. It's like a Liberty Bell. Get it?
I think it is the
Serge.
Liberty Bell.
I will confirm that is a bell.
Do we have big Frank Capra fans here? Do you?
Oh, I love
yes,
Frank Capra.
I love Frank Capra.
Oh, it happened one night.
Lost Horizon. And others.
Oh, it's an RKO. I almost said that before the film started. I was like, I think it is an RKO film.
Oh, Cards. I like that when it's Cards and someone changes it.
I want to know who's pulling those cards off.
Someone.
You never see their
amazing.
Hand. And they do it really well.
And we got a Barrymore. I love old movies. There's always a Barrymore.
We have H.P. Warner. Oh,
Gloria Graham.
Gloria Graham. Yeah, Gloria Graham.
Oh,
totally.
Doesn't she play the mom?
No, Beulah Bondi plays the mom.
Oh, no,
Gloria
Graham is
plays
the girl.
The other girl, Violet.
Yeah, the one who's sort of a floozy.
Gloria Graham played a lot of floozies in movies.
Gloria Graham is an underrated actress.
She did some cool stuff.
She did some awesome
stuff.
She did
some good film noirs and some really cool stuff.
And it's a really shame that she didn't. And there, William Hornbeck nominated for an Academy Award.
I used to always think that this font as well was like the official font of Christmas. I didn't realize for a long time that it wasn't.
It still is.
I think
Bedford
it is somewhere.
Falls.
Mm. And that probably was fake snow, I'm guessing.
Oh, totally fake.
But growing up in like Arctic Michigan, I bought it. Yeah. You know, I never once questioned whether or not that was real snow.
And we're seeing all the locations. And that's where we're hearing all the prayers right now.
Yeah.
Martinis.
There we go. Yes, so we're starting out. I mean, structurally, we're starting out towards the end of the story, and we're getting everything laid out for us in terms of the geography. And there's their house. And actually, if you remember, Marshall Herskovitz, and Ed Zwick, their company, they did 30 something. Mm-hmm. So at the end of it, when they had the their song, they had the picture of that the house
from It's a Wonderful Life.
From It's a Wonderful Life, that was their logo. Mm.
I love this, too. You don't often see something like this in an older film, you know, like pulling out outside in space, looking down.
That's
at
ambitious.
Yeah, it is ambitious. They're sort of representing God.
Yeah.
Well, because you've got the angels and I guess one of the saints.
Because God sends Clarence down to help out.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's not. I don't think it's God. I think maybe God shows up at one point, but I think it's like the angels are handling all this.
Oh, okay.
And I love that little thing too. Like the angels, like they're like workers. You know, this is their job. Like they're like, you know, like it's just very like organized and. That definitely influenced my thought of what I thought heaven was.
Yeah.
It was
what
angels do.
And you see, there's Clarence. Clarence is a little star.
Yeah, he's a little one.
He's not a galaxy.
Is it me or the one that's glowing look like an embryo?
It does.
It does.
Agreed.
Okay.
Oh, you see, there's Clarence. And right off the top, they're introducing the idea that we can hear people's thoughts and basically that there's angels right from the top and that they give us our point of view and our entry into the story.
Waiting for over 200 years to get his wings.
God, this movie's so good. I'm already like emotionally invested, and it's what been like 2 seconds.
And now they're going to tell the story of George.
Yep.
It's great.
Now, if you want to help a man.
And I like this. He can't see it at first. It's right. Like, I can't see it. Oh. And so they've already planted the whole, writing-wise, they've planted the whole idea that he doesn't have his wings yet. So obviously the goal of this film is for, actually, Clarence to get his wings.
Yeah, that's the real point of the movie. Yeah, the story.
George is incidental. That's right.
Clarence is like, me. That's all about me.
It's actually about Clarence. It's not about George yet. George is the object. Clarence is the subject.
But that's what opens it up. We could all be a George. You know, again, yeah. It opens it up to that.
And technically speaking, when you think about it, the way they've set it up semiotically, we could all have an angel watching over us.
Yeah.
Right. This looks like fun, I have to say.
This film, to me, it has set pieces along the way that are just heart-wrenching. This is where he loses his brother, right? Or something goes wrong.
No, this is where he saves his brother.
Saves his brother. Yeah. And this is where he breaks through the ice and just... 5, 4
So well done, actually.
3 What I love about it is how the way Capra directs. I mean, directed worked with the kids, however, with a dialogue coach or however they directed it. But the actors had fun, and you didn't think that the actors were not committed to anything.
Right.
Oh, that's so scary.
It was real. Wow, look at that.
Oh, I love it too. Look at those kids. They're we're gonna make a chain.
I'm telling you,
so many things, though. Like, if I thought anybody ever was going to fall into, like, a tar pit or through ice, I would have been like, let's make a human chain. Things I learned from this movie.
Yeah.
The common theme really is others helping you out along the rocky road of life.
Yeah.
I mean, we just had that in the ice. And then we have in the pharmacy with the prescriptions with the pharmacist later.
We're coming up. Yeah.
People that come between you and disaster.
And they just set up the whole hee-haw thing. I mean, just from the beginning, there's all sorts of character stuff. Well, of course, with the old man. What's his name again?
Lionel
Barrymore?
What's his character?
Mr. Potter. And then, of course, he loses hearing in one ear after saving his brother's life.
He's already lost it. Oh, that's right. This is the scene already.
And then, of course, he loses hearing, and then it's solidified by the pharmacist.
I love this. They're like 8 or 9 years old.
Yep.
She loves him, and Violet's got a crush on him.
Competing trollops.
Alpha females.
Cat fight.
But really, it's all about. The theme is how much we need each other in this world.
But also,
that's what it comes down to, right?
But what I like about this film, too, is how they're all tied together in this small town. I mean, in other words, they grow up living their lives together. So it's not like it's out of a vacuum. Oh, I just met you yesterday. I mean, they've all known each other since childhood.
This guy's a good little actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're all good actors.
His work during the prescription scene is wonderful.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always loved that.
Which is this scene, yeah. Which coming I keep on up, forgetting. It's like it's up. Right now. Mm. It's like
From
each
Tahiti.
Part is like a different movie.
It's very tough.
Which is great.
Yeah, it's a tough scene, but it's great because, you know, it's more real. He's not just some perfect guy. Like, he has a disability with the hearing loss in his ear, and that's something that a lot of people can relate to. I mean, maybe they have a bum leg, or you know, they've got problems in their shoulders.
I love that part where she leaned over and basically in his ear where he couldn't hear, she said that I love you forever.
I love that part.
It's so sweet.
Yeah, but that's the whole. It goes back to the whole thing. Is like she already knows at that age. I mean, according to the script, that she's, you know, she's tied to him.
Yeah, right.
Forever.
And he doesn't, and you know, he's deaf. He doesn't, and in a way, it's symbolic. He doesn't even hear it yet.
Yep.
Because even when he's older, he doesn't get it.
It takes him forever to hear it.
Exactly.
Oh no! Gosh.
But like George already, he's an old soul.
Yep.
Yeah. What do you say?
He's the big brother. I think a lot of times that happens, you know, to the older sibling. You take on a little bit more responsibility. You have to take a little bit more charge.
And you have to grow up faster.
Yep.
Yep.
He's so good in this scene.
I like that bottle that
did
you're
this
looking
actor
through.
Do anything after this?
Not that I recall.
Who, the kid?
Yeah.
But
young,
you know,
George.
Kid actors can be such a and hard thing because, but with this one, I believe him. I don't see him presentational. I don't see him performing. And that's just wonderful. Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm probably going to cry.
Already?
At some point. Yeah, I can already tell.
We've got an hour and 45 minutes.
I actually
minutes
started
to go.
Crying when it started a little bit because I thought
here's
I'm a grandma.
Kleenex.
So thank you for the Kleenex. Age.
Sure.
Well, and you cry because it's such a, it's so well done. It's realistic and it just rips your heart out.
Yeah.
Just shows, you know, everyone's got their stuff in life.
Everyone's got their thing.
We're all trying to get through it.
And the thing is that this comes back later. I mean, this is how tight this is, that this comes back later. Well, this is all part of it. This is how George affects everyone's life. And this is how we get to learn his life, how he's affected everyone.
Right.
And then, of course, this is a great entry. Ask Dad. So now we get to, you know, get to see the whole thing with his dad and Mr. Potter. Oh, there's that guy.
A zoom? Or that's optical
zoom. That was an optical zoom.
And look, they freeze frame. There's no grain.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
That's funny.
That's okay. And then we get to meet the people in the office, which is great. And who continue
through
the film.
Thomas Mitchell.
Oh.
Jinx.
I like fan streamers. There was just a moment where there was like, you never see that anymore, you know? I don't know why people don't put streamers on fans. They should do that. It's fantastic. How else would we know that they're on?
He's got his little strings on his finger to
I love these
him.
Characters in the office, and honestly, I feel ashamed that I don't know their names, and I don't know who the actors are other than Thomas Mitchell, but they're just so Capra-esque.
Right.
Yeah, in the ensemble.
I mean, they're so distinct.
It's the Capra rep company.
Yeah, it would totally fit into You Can't Take It With You, which I haven't seen in ages.
Now, who here can do a Lionel Barrymore impression?
Uh-oh, no.
Mickey Rooney does a great... Have you ever seen Mickey Rooney do his Lionel Barrymore impression?
Where does he do this?
He did it back in the 40s. I mean, he was known for it as a teenager, but throughout his whole life, he'll go into a Lionel Barrymore, and he just does it beautifully.
Well, when I'm three sheets to the wind, I do a great Mickey Rooney.
Well, of course, I thought John Lovitz did a good Lionel Barrymore impression in that Saturday Night Live sketch where they had the alternate ending to It's a Wonderful Life.
Where they just beat the crap out of Mr. Potter. The town just lines up to beat the crap.
Like, what are we waiting for? Let's go get him.
I forgot about that completely.
Yeah, it was hysterical.
It was so cathartic.
The alternate ending, yes. A little more cynical ending.
Yeah, but everyone wanted it to happen.
But yet, you wanted a piece of Potter, that's for sure.
I want a piece of you, Potter.
Look at right here. This is where he does the most.
Yeah. Oof.
This kid's work in this
and
scene.
And actually, the girl's work in that scene was... Yeah. But that helped sell
it. The reaction.
Mm. Is that blood coming out of his ears?
That's blood coming out of his ear.
Look at this. Oh.
Oh. And H.B. Warner, I mean, he was a great character actor.
That was one of the waxworks in Sunset Boulevard, correct?
Yep.
He was in King of Kings, Cecil B. DeMille. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this guy's an excellent actor.
He was in Lost Horizon also. I mean, he worked with Capra a lot. I mean, he did lots of films, but yeah.
Oh, don't hurt my sore again.
Yeah.
Kid's just great. I was very touched at that scene. I was very young when I saw this.
Yeah.
It really hit me hard. That's a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it's only like the first real one.
Yeah.
And who's this guy?
What's this actor's name?
Yeah,
oh, I don't know who that is.
You know, I think he might have a career. I don't know.
Sort of weird looking. I doubt if he'll last in pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that voice.
That's all plays.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a death warrant
to
a career.
It's a hard sell.
It is a good face. I like it too.
That's a nice frame to freeze on. It's interesting they freeze on that. I mean, once again, on that frame. I mean, just basically shows what he's about. You know, he wants a
big
lot.
Big plans. What actor, I mean, really came up to his level of what Jimmy Stewart had as far as earnestness
and charm?
Tom Hanks.
Oh, so everyone always said Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks. Hanks.
I think Cary Grant. I don't know. I'm
think different Cary Grant was more smooth.
Different types.
Right, but he could still play. He could play someone smooth. He could play an action hero, and he could do comedy. I mean, Capra brought it
as
out.
As far as versatile, but I mean as far as the earnestness, what Jimmy Stewart was really known for, the everyman, honorable, earnest guy that you believe and trust.
The regular guy.
Jimmy Stewart really was something unto himself in that way.
Now there's Mr. Gower.
And how is it possible that Mr. Gower could look any older? But he does.
Oh, old people don't age that much.
This is his first big shot at lassoing the moon, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Bert and Ernie.
Smith wins nomination. So, I mean, they dated this to... That was Al Smith.
So what era?
Ooh.
Well, this has to be the 20s, right? Because later when they do, I think they even say the graduating class is like 1928 or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, Gloria Graham.
Mm. Yeah, I love Gloria Graham.
That's Gloria Graham. Yeah.
There she goes.
Yeah, I think Al Smith may have been 28. I think Roosevelt was in 32.
She was like one of the most totally
Maybe
underrated
actors.
Maybe it was
the 30s that it's supposed to be right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Didn't something horrible happen to her too? Or am I
Gloria
just,
Graham?
No, someone
I'm not
else.
Familiar how things ended up for her.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I feel like something tragic happened to her.
Maybe.
Well, you better. No rumors. We don't want to get anyone worried.
Yeah.
This could just be speculation,
that's
ladies
right,
and gentlemen.
Oh, this is great.
Goodness, what's going on up there?
Bow, bow. Sorry. Someone's just shaking the chandelier there, Tim.
Oh, okay.
Pulling out a little Ferris Bueller there.
Well, I see a chandelier doing that.
But I love how they're just introduced so quickly and you know who they are automatically. That's right. The great thing.
So that's the brother he saved in the ice?
Yes.
Okay.
That's Harry, and that's the mother.
Oh, but Harry goes off to war, right?
Right.
I don't mean to get ahead. See, I haven't seen this in a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a little later. So tonight is, now it's Harry's.
Tonight's happy time. I got it. Okay.
It's Harry's graduation. And, oh, that's right. It's Harry's graduation, and it's the night. That's right. Potter's been giving his father a hard time.
Whoa.
What was that? He was slapping the
maid.
the maid's butt there.
The chandelier's going to get moving again.
He wants to take his mother's place.
Beulah Bondi. If anyone wants to see the best work, I think, that Beulah Bondi ever did in a movie, see Make Way for Tomorrow. It's a movie she did like in 1936. It's incredible. Seek it out if you want to watch more of her work.
I've seen her name in other things. I just don't remember in what.
Who has the butterfly collection?
Sick in his soul. That's if he has one.
That's Mr. Potter, yeah.
Yep. Which is interesting because I do think that this film takes a lot from A Christmas Carol.
Right.
Yes.
In certain ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that
it does. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But instead of following Scrooge, it's like we're following...
A good guy.
What's the...
Bob Cratchit.
But there's like a mixture. Right. It's a mixture of a Cratchity Scrooge. Because we still have both.
So It's a Wonderful Christmas Carol would be if we followed Mr. Potter.
Yes.
And he had a change of heart.
Yes. But he'd yeah. Yep.
Hmm. The Long Dark
Anybody want to contact me for that idea? Heidi Hilliker.
The Long Dark Night of Mr. Potter.
Well, Dickens created a lot of stories, and you have to think that a lot of people took from Dickens in some way.
Oh, sure. And a lot of Christmas-type films or stories
are modeled after
A Christmas Carol, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably the best Christmas story there is.
What's the one that's best remembered? So.
But this is right up there, I would say.
Yeah, I would too.
Because I guess it's sort of about the spirit of the time, which is, you know, being grateful for what you have, being thankful, family.
But I think they're both about the same thing. They're actually about the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, this was post-war, so, I mean, there's a lot, you know, definitely, well, I don't know. I mean, who knows? We weren't around. But...
Oh,
yeah. I was not alive in 1946.
I was not alive in 1946, Heidi. I know I'm old, but I'm not that old.
Oh, I was saying me.
Oh, okay.
Maybe in a past life.
Oh, well, past life, all bets are off.
See, his father's got it figured out.
Yeah, he does. He just doesn't. He's not ready to hear it yet.
Oh, well
but who is when you're that age?
Yeah,
when you're in your early 20s, you don't know what you really want. You think you want something, but then 10 years later, you realize that maybe you didn't want that. Maybe that's not what's best.
Or you tried and it didn't necessarily work. I mean, the thing is, you learn that you can't get what you wanted, but you find things that can work for you.
Right.
You know. I mean,
what you want isn't always what's best for you.
Right.
Well, what you want is not necessarily anything that necessarily works for you.
Right.
The whole thing.
And just because you don't get it doesn't mean you're a failure.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, I think his father is reconciled. But the thing is that his father has fought this battle and thought he had that reconciled. But then he's still, I mean, he's still fighting in a way. Potter is evil, you know. I mean, Mr. Potter is evil. He's, in a way, he's evil incarnate. He is the antagonist. He is the one who will take everything good away from everybody. And, you know, clearly.
Well, there's nothing subtle about him.
Clearly, right. Clearly, Mr. Yeah,
I mean, he's pretty much one dimensional.
Yeah, clearly, Mr. Bailey is trying to take away, is trying to protect that. He is, and that's what this all becomes about, because then George becomes the protector. He's the one that holds back. I mean, that is his job, is to hold back essentially the devil, if you want.
Right.
Hee-haw.
Yeah, see, it's the class of 1928.
28. Yeah, 28. So, yeah, 28 was when Smith got the nomination. Because I think in 32, Roosevelt got the nomination and Smith became vice president. I know. How do I know that? Don't ask me. I just do. It's Mickey Rooney.
Rooney now.
Really?
Not back then.
He's in his 90s now. You know that?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Mickey Rooney doesn't look that good right now.
No. Here's Gloria Graham.
Again.
Look at her. She is like...
She is like sex incarnate.
She is.
I love her in Greatest Show on Earth.
Yeah.
She was
fantastic.
You know, that's the part that Lucille Ball was supposed to play.
Oh, that would have sucked. No offense.
She was pregnant and she couldn't do it, so they got Gloria Graham.
Oh, it would have sucked. Better.
Like, yeah, she's fantastic in that. Another film I used to watch with my grandparents all the time.
Oh, and there we go.
Do, 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 do.
She's like, you're looking at me? What?
She's wonderful.
Yeah.
She is great in this. This is probably, once again, and her greatest, even though she did win an Oscar for...
From Here to Eternity.
This is her greatest role.
She was really
fabulous
like 53. In this movie.
Yeah.
She got such a chance to play so many different aspects of her personality, too. I mean, that's the great thing. That, once again, the script, the material provided the environment for this.
And wasn't this one of her first movies, Donna Reed? I think it might have been.
46? I don't know. It was pretty early on.
Yeah.
It was early in her career.
Yeah.
Her film career. And I love her so much in this movie. I always thought the title should be It's a Wonderful Wife.
She is a pretty amazing wife considering everything that happens.
Well, but it's funny because now, you know, his point of view has been changed because he hasn't seen her in years. And for him, she was always a little girl.
Right.
Not anymore.
Well, clearly not anymore.
And that's such a universal thing for if you've ever, you know, had childhood friends and you grow up and you don't see them a while and then you come back and they've changed and you're like, oh.
But also the age difference thing when you're, you know, when you're young, like 2 years or 4 years.
Huge.
Like,
three, four years.
And then
huge.
After, you know, like 20 years later, like, there's so no difference.
Am I the only one that was very unsettled the first time you saw this when they opened up the floor?
Oh.
And I thought everyone was going to fall backwards and hit their head and die.
Oh, I didn't think everyone was going to
I got very upset.
Really?
I was like, oh no, don't do that.
This is really well shot. Look at that.
And again, I think this is the first time I knew that you could have pools. And
gymnasiums.
I didn't think, because I never had one growing up.
Or coverings. Now, this is interesting. Yeah. Now, you know, Violet... You know, she's like, oh, thank you. He's like, no, 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 you're out. And this just starts to show that Violet necessarily is not necessarily a winner in life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
At least showing us in this story. Oh, this is great. I like that the dude has freckles.
Yeah.
Like so many freckles.
That
I just want to call him freckles.
That makes him a geek because he has freckles.
I know. And he's got the geek voice.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Dun, dun, dun.
Is that the guy that played Alfalfa?
Maybe. I don't know.
You know Carl Switzer, is it?
Possibility.
Hmm.
Oh, well, and I know that this shot's like, what?
This made me nervous.
That is scary.
Because the people don't know. See, look at that. And I was like, ah.
Yeah.
And they're just so into it, they have no idea.
we must be good.
We're just not falling in. That's what's great about us.
It's a great sequence.
It really is.
Nope.
Oh. Nice fall by the stunt people.
He's still dancing.
But that's what it, yeah, that's what's great. See, and then that's where you see like the spark of what a wonderful person he really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't let things get him down.
Those crazy kids.
Yeah.
Too much sugar in their diet.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, and even the bad guys. You know, even the troublemakers. We're going to jump in
too.
Oh,
well,
now.
It's cool to be in the pool now. I guess I better jump in.
Yeah. Now, one thing, I mean, I love how this film is shot and basically how it's cut, because I think it's shot, it's shot really well and cut together well. I mean, just, I mean, in terms of placement of the angles, everything cuts really pretty well, except for there's one
cut I don't like.
Yeah, I like this part, too.
Oh, yeah, it's this part's great.
Yeah,
I like
so
this
sweet.
Part because, yes, the courtship is happiness.
Cold it is.
It's, you know. They
young love, fresh, you know, yeah, first love.
The fun times in life. You
look,
know?
It's Titanic breath.
Titanic breath.
But it's real. I hate Titanic breath.
Oh, gosh.
You do know what Titanic
is. Who doesn't want to go on like a date like this, you know? Like, it's so fun you have to go home in like gym clothes and a robe.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, just like boring dinner in a movie. Like something unpredictable happened and it made it fun.
There's no pretension. There's nothing in the way.
Yeah, and they're just being themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Oh, foreshadowing. He's going to step on that rogue trail.
Oh.
Aw.
Hey, I don't want to kiss your hand.
Hey, baby. Of course, this was back in the days when it, you know, the courting was much more formal and, you know, a little more strict.
But I like the little touches because, you know, they're doing this whole thing and then the neighbor's watching them and he's just like, go ahead and kiss her.
Youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, this is the house where if you can make a wish, right?
Right. Ooh, that's a good shot. Yeah, there we go. There's the guy. And this is great because now we see, you know, this reveals his character, well, part of his character, his dreams. This is what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Now, you know, of course, they bastardized this and colorized this.
Oh. Yeah.
Colorized version of
they did the same thing to It's a Wonderful... No, This is a Wonderful Life. to A Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Gross.
Oh, yes.
So I take it we have a table of purists who like the black and white version?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I know what she wished for.
Well, and it's because that's how it was meant to be seen. Mm-hmm. The way the shots are set up, the way the lighting, the cinematography, everything, it's meant to be black and white. It's not meant to have all
the
these,
artist
like,
intention
cheesy was, colors added onto it.
He's just like, come on, dude.
Just kiss her.
Now, is there anyone at this table who does not believe these two belong together after this scene?
Aww. It's a nice shot.
They're meant for each other.
I like the moon, like through the trees.
They were meant for each other in the soda shop, in the drugstore.
Yep, when she leaned over.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Good. Tear.
I got some Kleenex here.
I like the wind.
Ooh.
In her hair.
Yes, you're talking too much.
He did that because of his deaf ear, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You want me?
Ooh, he's a bit of a hothead there. Oh.
Boo!
No, but that was interesting.
This is an exciting night.
Yeah. Because so much for the strict dating.
Because yeah, the strict dating of the past.
Went out the window.
Right. But that little thing there, as you see, you know, he's a little bit of a hothead. He's a little bit of a temper.
Yeah.
Just a bit of it. Which is
if provoked.
Right, exactly. Which is what kind of gets him on a wrong track later on.
Right.
It's the Russ. The it rustling like, bushes is like, no, wait a minute.
Why would I give you this robe?
I've read about things.
That's right, yeah. He's milking this for all it's worth. This is, I mean, this is great. I mean, he's totally playing this great for the comedy. He's playing against a bush.
She's playing a bush.
Well, she's not shaking the bush. That's some grip. And it, oh, here you go. And then, of course,
happiness is cut short.
Happiness is cut short.
And I thought he did that so well just there. I'm sorry, I've got to go. He did that so realistically.
Yeah, and then she's like...
They didn't even get an entire night out of it. Aww. Just a bit.
They didn't even get a kiss.
And then, all we did was the ellipse. We didn't need to see his father die or anything. We just know what happened.
Well, and I like that, too. I like that scene that you see the father, you know, right before they go out. I like that's his... That last time you see him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's very economical, which is nice.
Yeah, there's no need for a maudlin scene where he's crying over his dead father. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know.
Because it's about George. Well, it's about George, but it's really about Clarence. About Clarence getting his wings.
Did anyone ever see the TV remake of this movie?
No.
With Marlo Thomas and Cloris Leachman.
Oh, wait a minute.
Whoa.
I have a vague recollection of that.
Cloris Leachman was the angel and Marlo Thomas was George.
Whoa.
There was another also.
It's called It Happened One Christmas, I believe.
Okay, yeah, there was. Yeah. You know, I think that's the one I'm thinking. Huh. There was I think there was either
it
that
wasn't
or
bad,
another one.
But, you know, that's speaking when you said, what was my first impression of this movie? How do I recall it? I saw the TV movie with Marlo Thomas and Cloris Leachman before I saw this movie.
Oh no.
So I watched the Marlo Thomas, Cloris Leachman movie going, that's a great movie. They don't make TV movies like that. This is awesome. And then
Little
I saw this
you know.
And I went, oh.
I have a vague recollection of It Happened One Christmas. I think there was another version done with a guy. I somehow remembered I used to work at a video store. I don't remember what it was called, but it was...
I saw a really bad version of this done at a dinner theater in Florida.
Ooh.
With music.
Dude.
There's a musical version of it.
Yep.
It's a Wonderful Life.
So how many words rhyme with life? How many did they find?
Wife? Strife?
Knife.
Ooh. Mm.
Dinner theater. What was it?
It was at a dinner theater.
Theater,
musical
Florida.
Dinner theater in Florida. Mm.
That's got,
sorry.
That's got soap dish written all over.
I know,
there's the
right?
soap dish with the
I
musical
was just thinking about
dinner
that.
Theater.
I won't say the theater or the theater company, and I'm sorry for bringing you guys up, but you kind of did it to yourself. But my grandma took me to see that.
It was very nice, your grandma.
How was the dinner?
Better than play?
Unmemorable.
Okay. Oh.
There might have been Salisbury steak.
Oh, when there's Salisbury steak, you know you're in trouble.
Usually it's chicken and rice in dinner theater, but okay.
Well, getting back to the movie.
Yeah, sorry.
I think this scene is, it shows everything about who George is.
Yep.
You know, despite what he wants, he knows what's right. And he knows that what is right is what's the best thing.
Well, it shows that he absorbed the lessons from his father because he's never been challenged up until this point to actually show
to
them.
To actually stand up
and
do and
use them. And now he's like, wait a minute, you know.
Wait for what? Yeah.
Barry Morey. It's great. Well, I love the extras, actually. If you watch them, I mean, they're not extras, not background. They're actually acting. They don't have any lines, but they're definitely
they're
totally involved in the scene, which is great.
They're all connected.
Yep. And I like, you know, he talks about his father, and his father's portrait is always in the background, which is great. I mean, that's great framing, you know.
Making his dad proud.
Yeah.
I like how he says he's a richer man than you'll ever be because he's richer in soul.
Right. And that's the whole thing. I mean, George knows. He knows the path. He knows where, you know, what the path is. He's just not getting onto it. And then when he's on it, he's just never, he never accepts it until, you know, he has his little adventure.
Ugh, you can just see the spite in his eyes.
Yeah.
So there's Lionel Barrymore, Ethel Barrymore, John Barrymore, and Drew Barrymore. That's the most well-known Barrymores, right?
Yep, and and Jade Barrymore.
And who?
Jade is Drew Barrymore's mother.
Oh.
I like the bird.
Yeah, the random bird.
Oh, there's a model of a house. I never saw that before.
Right, yeah, and it's a crow.
Crows are usually portents of doom.
Yep. Standing over a little house. I don't think that that's accidental.
That's nothing subtle about that.
Yeah, I guess there isn't.
He's pecking at the house. He's signifying doom.
You know, he's probably glued to the to the counter. Why isn't he moving? The bird is not moving. And how do you get a bird not to move?
It's probably just trying to look. It's not glued.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Serge. Okay, society. Talk about speculation.
Hey, I had a good theory going there for a second.
Look at that, dun, dun, right dun, dun, the dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, exactly. So
he's 2 inches from that camera.
And they repeat that shot, I think, two more times. That type of thing where he comes
like
right up into
the
camera.
Like when he realizes what's going on in the alternate universe.
Well, totally. And I think there's one more time, I think.
That's got to be hard. You know, I mean, college is just something that a lot of people do. Especially nowadays, it's like you feel like you're, you know, if you want to go somewhere in life, you got to have
college. Well, especially back then in the 20s, you know, and to have the opportunity to go and not to be able to go must have been just heartbreaking.
Yeah, exactly. Back then it was, you know, it wasn't as common. So it was a really big deal. And, oh, man.
Right.
And of course, like the young kid, you know, like doing whatever he wants and I mean, being nice, but, you know, obviously like not taking everybody else into consideration.
Yeah. And he's like.
Oh, you got married before me?
Congratulations.
You got a college education before me. You got married before me. Yeah, he did a nice subtle look on his face there when he found out he was married. There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
The jealousy, the surprise, the happiness.
Yeah.
Not even so much jealousy is just self-reflection.
There's the look.
Yeah.
There's the look right there.
Yeah. Self-reflection, thinking about his own life.
Because she mentioned the job. Look at that
once
moment.
Again, he
look
sacrifices himself.
Well, and then he sees it. I mean, he knows right away. The second they step off that train, he's got that missus that
here,
he's not
it's right
coming
here.
Back here.
Here. It's in the turn, right as we're going. And someone bumps into him. That was very intentional. And now he's moved into it, and he's smiling, and he's going to ask her, you know, is this a good opportunity for him?
Of course, he's going to sacrifice again.
Yep.
Because he knows it's right. This guy's a good character actor.
I love him.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And this role is just so different than other. I know, Tim, you've been watching some films with lots of Thomas Mitchell lately. And he's played like cops, you know, tough guys. And this is such a different role from that.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone knows him as Scarlett O'Hara's dad in Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
See, I know him from this.
Oh, what does he always call her? What's his little, like, you know, he always has that little, like, Irish
pet name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess the urban legend goes that he really did crash into something off camera. Like, that really happened, it, like, the set or something off camera.
Oh, well,
and Jimmy
funny.
Stewart was reacting for real.
As you're saying that, I was watching Jimmy Stewart's reaction, and it seemed very...
Very natural.
I seem to either have thought that or heard that at some point. Yeah, that makes sense.
So that
would make
the
sense
urban legend.
Thomas Mitchell on purpose did it to get that true reaction out of Jimmy Stewart.
Or it's just a happy accident.
I think it was just a happy accident.
See, this is,
I don't think it was supposed to happen.
See, this right here, these are great moments. These are the moments I love in film where you actually get to watch the character go through these moments where they're thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
got like 15, 20, 25 seconds now all to himself, and it just is so revealing. I mean, but it can't be the whole film. But.
Right, but now this would be so spoon-fed to us, you know? Like, right. Oh, audiences aren't going to understand that he's reflecting and that he's, you know, he's making this sacrifice. He's going to have to say that.
Well, yeah. Well, unfortunately, in a lot of acting, you have a lot of indicating. It's like, you know, when I'm being followed, I have to dart my eyes and look. And like, it's like, no, just you look once and then you keep on going.
My favorite example of that in this movie is when he's at the bar thinking about killing himself.
Yes.
That is beautifully done, beautifully played, and it's just a one camera shot that's held.
And you know what he's thinking. He doesn't need to say anything.
Exactly.
You know what he's mulling over in his head and going from one point to the next of whether to do it or not.
I love hearing that he's talking with his mother, and you can see, I mean, I just love how the shot's laid out, and you see people partying in the background there.
Right.
I mean, I know it's a detail,
it's
but
symbolic,
I love
actually.
It.
Others are able to party. He's not.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, inside. Yeah, inside he's not able to.
It's really well framed.
And then you get to see, I mean, this is if really big scene with his mother. He doesn't really have another scene so closely with her. And that,
well,
this,
and then of
I mean,
course,
this pays off later when she doesn't, she has no idea who he is. And that's
she's
important.
She's cold and, you know, severe. And she's so lovely. And
yeah, they're so loving
sweet
here.
Oh,
here.
That other scene.
They look at each other.
Actually, that other scene is probably one of the most chilling for me. You know, that your mother doesn't even know who you are.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, put him in the right direction, Mama.
See?
But he wimps out.
And there's Violet. Oh, no.
Stick around just a kiss.
I like how she talks like a big city girl.
Yeah, she does. But you know, there's always that girl in a small town.
Yep.
Oh, there is?
Yes,
yeah,
there
the
is.
Girl who wants to be the big city girl who never leaves but thinks she is big city.
Oh my!
And there's no one there to disprove her.
And the popular girl.
See, I always grew up in the suburbs. I never saw that.
Oh, I've been like the suburbs. But there's always those people who want to be that kind of person. They just can't go.
Right.
But they still emulate that in their everyday life.
Oh, yeah. Look at her. He's talking about the romantic stuff, and she's like, well, what are you talking about? I love the look of panic on her face. She's like, oh, that guy, yeah, great.
Now, why do you think he does this to her? Do you think he's just being silly, or why would he do this to her, do you think?
Because he's unsure about his feelings towards Donna Reed.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
It is sort of odd how he suddenly turns on her like that and kind of...
I think he just wanted to shut her up.
Oh, no, I think he was being sincere. There. He's like, maybe, you know, Violet's the one. Maybe, yeah.
We could run
like,
away, but seeing her reaction is,
you know what, actually,
how he knows.
That's what it is. Actually, you know what, that's what it is. I take that back. You're right. Because she's the one who wants to almost get out of town.
Right, who seems to have the adventure, the one who wants
she's
the big city girl.
She's
right.
The kindred spirit, because this girl here, she wants to stay here. She doesn't want to go away, and he wants to go away.
And
right.
That's
he identifies with Violet.
Yeah, and that's why it takes forever to get to her house, because, and that's why he's kind of angry in this scene, because he doesn't want to settle down. He wants to go away.
He still wants to go away. He still wants to, yeah.
Even though he knows in his heart that she's the right girl for him and that, you know, they're meant to be. He doesn't want to accept the fact that he's going to be tied down.
No, he fights it mightily in this scene.
It's so sweet.
Oh, George Lasso, the moon. She puts the song, their song on. Oh,
what a lady. Will you come in for a minute?
Well, that's the thing, is that he can't even... Everything's an obstacle for him right now, including that gate.
Yeah.
And it just makes his mood worse.
But this scene, I remember when I was a kid, I didn't understand this scene. I didn't understand why he was so angry at her. But, of course, now that I'm older, I understand the complexities of...
Oh, yeah.
Not wanting to grow up, not wanting to face what could happen if he got together with her, which is that he'd settle down and he doesn't want to.
Well, it's that the whole thing is it's him giving up his dream.
Yeah.
Really.
But as he comes to realize at the end, she really is his life.
Yep,
and
his dream.
It's a wonderful life. Mm. She should be his dream. It's a wonderful wife.
She is.
See, that's, yeah, there you go. I mean, listen to his tone. He's just like, he is angry.
Yeah.
And she's just trying so hard.
But isn't this what boys always do to girls they like? they're mean. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they're young, anyway.
No.
No.
No. No. No.
No. He's...
I just love how he tries to insult her. You know, it smells like pine needles right here. Thank you.
he's
it's so painful. She's trying to, you know, bring it back, be fun, and he just makes her feel like an idiot.
I mean, this scene is just so painful to watch for her. It really is.
But she handles it so well because she's a lady.
Because she's got character.
She's Donna Reed.
They don't make him like that anymore.
I think the last thing that Donna Reed did was Falcon Crest.
Oh, yeah.
She did that show and then she passed away.
I just came in to get warm.
Right. Yeah,
he's...
Whoa!
Sam Wainwright.
Sam Wainwright just like sets him off even more.
I love the mom though, just getting him jealous.
Well, yeah. That's how you get him. You make him jealous.
Yeah. Oh no, she wants Mary to hook up with Sam totally. Sam's like the industrialist.
Yeah. He's rich.
Yeah, look at this. Oh man, she's like, bam.
Oh. He's waiting. Forget about that other jerk.
God, she's great in the scene. I just love it.
And
hello.
And now she's like,
and she's playing it up.
Totally playing it.
And this was planned at the beginning. She said, "Hee-haw." And that's how we know
who it is.
It's a shorthand that lets him know automatically that it's Sam.
Mom's not too happy.
Yeah, like, oh, not that George.
And of course, there he is with some floozy.
That's right, yeah.
Mary,
there's no place for you in Sam's life.
But the mother doesn't care. She just cares that he's rich.
Exactly, not that Mary wants Sam.
But
exactly.
There is a place for her.
In Sam's life?
Yeah.
That's Mary?
Why he has a floozy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
she's
not a floozy.
Wife.
Yeah, exactly.
And he'll have the floozies on the side.
Okay.
This scene right here is just spectacular.
Oh, yeah, this is great.
The acting between them.
Look at him smell her hair. Yep.
He just can't
resist as much as he's trying to resist her.
He's really conflicted. And that's what makes us great.
Yeah.
He's like barely listening.
Like to be so close to her. He's just like, he can't help himself.
Look at her, making herself close. This is it. Either
she's about to like, now or he'll she's about to cry. She's like, there's so much intensity in her.
Yeah, she does look like she's about to cry at any moment.
Because she's just—it's there's so much inside. Oh.
To
be that close to someone you have that kind of feeling about, but you haven't gone there yet. Like,
And the way that he just treated her, like, oh man.
Oh man,
it's painful.
This is a long sustained shot. Yeah. I mean, this has been over a minute and a half now,
which really makes it work.
Yeah.
For the intensity between them.
Well, right, because they can't break away from each other, so we can't break away from them.
Yep. Right.
We're all in it together.
Barely. Barely.
And he says the words, it's a chance of a lifetime.
Oh, he's so angry.
Mm-hmm.
Aww. Aww, he just can't help it.
The older you get, the more you understand this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Like
the
when
mom.
mom. When I was a kid, I didn't really understand it. But now that I'm older and I've experienced more in my life, I totally understand.
It's not exactly a movie that comes to you like immediately.
Right.
You have to come to this movie.
Oh, totally.
Through the experience of living.
But all levels can appreciate it. There's many levels of appreciation to it.
Right.
Right, I mean, the more complex ones are harder to suss out and see why they're so important, but you can still get it. And I love that it's raining. And the mother's crying.
It's good luck.
Oh, really? Rain is good luck?
Yeah, it's good luck if it rains on your wedding day.
There you go.
Isn't that kind of odd how that is? I never understood why it was good luck.
Well, rain, I think, just like back in time is considered pretty lucky because, you know, before we could predict weather... You know, so much of life depended on rain.
Right.
Yep. Well, you needed to water your plants. You need to get water for...
Rain was a blessing, not a curse.
That's true.
I do know that's true. For Betty Davis, she always said rain was the good luck in her life. If she had to make a decision and it was raining, she knew that she was right in whatever she decided and it was good luck and everything would be fine.
See, if you live in Southern California, you're
in
trouble.
That's really true, though.
Oh.
That's really true because it barely rains here.
Yeah. Oh, and of course, this is setting up what's going to happen next. All the money.
And so, but basically, what he's done is now he's integrated. He's still held on to his dream and trying to integrate into his marriage.
Right.
And this is the next lesson he learns that maybe.
The taxi driver rang.
You know, how is that going to work? And clearly, not necessarily going to work.
He doesn't get a break, does he?
He just doesn't get a break.
He doesn't get a break. That's a great shot of them looking through the back of the cab.
Let's not stop, let's go. But see, he can't help it because he's a good guy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the sad thing about the whole time, because he's always fighting himself, you know? But, I'm a good guy, but I hate myself for being a good guy. But I wouldn't be any other kind of a guy, but I hate this.
But she, you know, here's the important part. She completes him now because she's the one who comes up with the solution.
Right.
It's not
to give away the money.
To give away the money for their honeymoon, exactly. You know, he's still trying to be the way he used to be, but this is how she shows that she can integrate into his life.
Right.
But it's at the sacrifice of him being the adventurer traveling the world.
Well, he's sacrificing what he wants for the good of everyone. And that's, I don't know, that's what I think a hero is. They're sacrificing themselves for others.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, that's what's so great about this movie is it shows that you don't have to be, you know, a war hero or a great political leader to be a hero.
Right.
You can be a hero just by being a good person and helping people.
the nameplate on the desk is Matilda Bailey. So that means they must all be related in the office.
I guess so.
I don't know.
It's a family company.
Is it a family company?
Mm-hmm. No, are they uncle?
Well, there's he's the uncle. Then I guess there's cousins. The other ones are cousins.
Yeah.
You just don't know. Is that the father? I think that's a picture of the father on the wall. And, of course, Potter calls.
He waited for the right moment to strike.
Scary old house, too. Look at that house.
Oh, don't like the awful decor. A bit busy.
Is that a bust of Napoleon in the background?
It probably is. I'm sure this man fancies himself a little bit of a conqueror.
But you know what? He's crippled. He is crippled emotionally and physically.
But George Bailey has a disability, and he doesn't let him get it down. Not quite as severe as that. But you know what his flaw is?
He's deaf in his left ear.
Right.
But he can't hear. I mean, once again, the symbolism is he can't hear.
That's true.
What he should be hearing.
Right. He doesn't quite hear it.
He doesn't quite hear until.
Until the end.
Actually, in the fantasy sequence, he does actually hear because he loses that, then he can hear and see
for the first time.
Basically, he can hear for the first time. Yeah, he hears everything towards the end.
Yeah, good point.
No, I like that one, Mrs. Kafka. My English teacher from high school would be proud of me. She was all about symbolism. that's a great cinematic touch. He says that, and of course the cops go by, and it just draws us emotionally to that and draws us away from what his argument is. You know, I'm wondering if the concept of owning your, because I mean the sign says own your own home, if the concept of owning your own home, you know, were people mostly renting, or was it the whole drive to actually try and own your home? Was there a big drive towards that in the earlier part of the century? And this is, you know, this
well,
is
I think
part
that's
of that
all
idea.
Early Americana, you know, from
American Dream.
Yeah, from Pilgrim time, you know, like the Mayflower hit the shore. You want to have your own home. I mean, that was
your own space to do what you want, and, you know, worship the way that you want.
But the idea of
freedom of religion.
But the idea of having a building and loan which allowed you to live that dream, as opposed to having to dealing with a bank, which was much harder to get a loan from, which is what Potter obviously represents. $0.50 on the dollar.
Oof.
You see how it's framed? You see Mary in the upper part of the frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Taking it in.
I mean, we don't, it's not laid out for us, but it's laid out. Well, it's suggested, so it's going to come up in a second.
Gosh, lemmings.
Yeah. Sheep.
Really small detail. If you look along by the wall, by the window, you can see how it's painted. So it looks like it's dirty. You know, so the place hasn't been painted in ages.
Yeah. Right.
And it is amazing how quickly the townspeople forget.
Yes.
Yeah. They let panic set in and
survival.
Capitalism.
But they think their survival's at stake. So.
Yeah.
Right.
But see, here's the thing is George really is a dreamer. I mean, everything he's saying right now, this is how a dreamer speaks.
But he's speaking like his father did, too. His father was a dreamer. His father was a dreamer locally. George thought he could take that dream and live it elsewhere. But actually, his dream was detached from people. That's the whole thing. It was always about himself, not about other people. His father's dream was about other people.
Right.
But it still is. That's the thing. He's just not self-aware enough to realize it.
Right.
And then, of course, Mary's the one who steps in, wife that she is.
But the idea is that she completes his...
Mm-hmm. She completes him.
She does complete him. I'm not being trite.
No, yeah.
She does.
I understand, yeah.
She really is perfect for him.
She sees what he doesn't see. She hears what he doesn't hear.
Right.
see people working together. Mm-hmm. This is all about right here. What is it you really need rather than what you'd like?
And that's what Capra was all about. He was about people working together.
And they're going to trust him to do this, and they'll enter into it, and he's going to honor it. And together, they'll be able to defeat what's going to otherwise take them down. Ellen Corby. Isn't that Ellen Corby?
Ellen Corby from the Waltons?
1750.
Walton. Oh, Ellen Corby was a Frank Capra regular.
Oh, wow.
She was in Pocketful of Miracles. Yeah. And they made it.
There you go. I love that guy.
Let's get drunk.
Oh, that's Tilly. Her name's Tilly. Well, Matilda Tilly.
So she's Matilda Bailey.
And the other cousin with the thick glasses.
I wish they were rabbits.
Whoa.
La 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 la.
But these moments, this is authentic. This isn't him being miserable.
I like how they just back.
And again, why you care about him, why he's likable.
Yeah. And it shows me you got to grab your moments and happiness in life when you can get them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in the midst of what they're going through this day, and they can have this moment now.
See, now I actually think that what's about to happen on his honeymoon, you know, as opposed to a big fancy hotel, he goes to a house that his wife had wished for them, and they create something special. It's not, you know, fabricated with money. It's fabricated with love and hope and dreams.
That's right.
Sweet.
I think it's more romantic, quite frankly.
It's wonderful to hear.
And what's great, what's great about, actually, back to the writing here and the plan, basically he just said the address, 320 Sycamore, because we haven't heard that yet. And that'll come back in the alternate reality.
Right.
Take me to 320 Sycamore. What?
And so it's the love of the town for him, because they do appreciate him. Yeah. If he was a nobody like he thought that he was, they would never have done this for him.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Out in the pouring rain like that? Come on. No, the town really does love him and appreciate him.
Has anyone had an It's a Wonderful Life moment, personally, as far as when you felt very low and very alone and cut off, where you had either a group of people or something come your way to make you feel otherwise, to like what happens in this movie?
Oh, sure.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think everyone at some point in their life has had a moment where they felt like, you know, why am I here?
Because I've actually had a moment like this happen in my life, which is right out of this movie, where I was alone. I thought I was the only person in the world. And someone knocked on the door, and there were 15 people outside the door that made it their mission to come over and cheer me up and spend the evening.
I just want to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take anything from that. Well, anything away, but I love the gag with the hat.
Yeah.
As one of my favorite things in this film is the gag with the hat.
See, if a guy did this for me, this would be far more romantic than like sweeping me off to some like expensive honeymoon.
I love his face.
Like, because it's the thought that counts.
He sees this, she's like, what?
Aww.
Aww.
I bet his brother and his wife didn't have a honeymoon like this.
Yeah. Come on. Money can't buy you happiness.
Because you always got to one-up your sibling. I don't know if anybody knows that, but that's the whole point of life.
I like that.
It's being turned by the record. I love it.
That's a record player, folks. And you play music on it.
You can play music and turn a rotisserie.
That's right. That's a nice shot. But they have the soft focus on it.
Yeah.
He pushes them.
Speechless.
It's like, come on, buddy. Get in there.
And look, they're in Tahiti.
I thought it was a camera move. Whoa.
Like the first time when he put the coconut on her ice cream and he talked about how they come from Tahiti.
Oh.
Aww.
So sweet.
Aww.
It's Bert and Ernie singing, right? You know that, those the characters from Sesame Street were named after these characters.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yep. Little technical point. I'm kind of confused as to when they decide to use a soft focus filter on these guys and don't. And here they're not.
They usually just do it on the girls. It's a chick thing.
Yeah, to make them look younger.
No. The beauty shot.
No, I understand
blur
that,
the wrinkles.
But here they're not using it. So that's why I was kind of a little confused.
They just use it in the close-up.
They didn't need to with Donna Reed.
Aww. I own it.
Oh, we haven't seen Mr. Martini yet. This is the first time.
There's a lot of kids.
It's Mr. Martini.
Is he supposed to be Italian?
And a goat.
And a goat.
Yes. Miss Martini owns the bar.
Right, but is he supposed to be Italian?
I thought so.
Yeah. I was going to say, he's a nice Italian stereotype.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know what else he's supposed to be.
I thought, but... O Sole Mio, I take that to be Italian.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, Martini, ending with an I.
Look at that nice house.
Yeah, that's a really nice house.
And there's Sam Wainwright.
He's moving on up.
And he's like, oh, yeah.
I love the look on her face like, oh, him.
Yeah, exactly.
Aw.
That character actor, man. What's his name? He was in everything.
Yeah, he was in lots of 60s sitcoms, man.
I think he lived to be like 100 and something.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like Mr. Potter's assistant.
Suckers. He's like Lurch.
I was just going to say that.
He's always behind him. He's always got this scowly look at whoever's there.
You rang.
It's like, what do you want? And he's always by his side. See, his hand's like right on the chair behind Potter.
Well, does he push the wheelchair?
He does, but he doesn't have to stay there behind his desk the whole time.
Mm. Yeah, he's definitely a lackey.
Oh, super lackey. Super mean looking lackey.
Don't old people ever die?
The mean ones don't.
I love the juxtaposition of the two different women, too.
Yeah.
You know, Mary's got a cute little baseball hat on.
And she's got like diamonds and a fur coat. Yep.
And I mean, the implication is that he's never left town.
Yeah, I don't think he ever leaves town the entire film.
He never leaves town. Now, she left town and Harry left town and most people have left town, but he's never been able to leave town.
Where did she go?
She went to college.
She went to college, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
He never went to college. And I love this, how basically they go off. And they turn around, and he's like, oh, crap.
Now that the guy's gone, he doesn't see him anymore. He's like, damn it.
And what does he do? He kicks the door. He is, again, he's pissed. Because, you know.
He's so tired. He'd
like to be able to leave town. He'd like to be able to do something for himself.
Yeah.
Now, juxtaposed against the... The scene at the building in Lone where they have the father's, you know, face still on the wall here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Potter. It's Potter's face on the wall. He has his own picture in his own office.
I like how the chair
guest chair is lower than his.
Lower.
Yeah.
He wants people to be lower than him always.
I just stand. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you get from me, Potter.
He's got a skull.
This is a skull. Holy crap.
Subtle.
Is that a skull keychain or something?
I don't know. What
it's like
is
a cigarette lighter.
Cigarette lighter
with a chain.
That is one scary looking
man,
skull.
Man, he is deaf. That's what he is.
Yeah, that skull cap's making itself known.
Yeah. The suckers, Mr. Potter.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put that cigar out right between your eyes.
Really? See that pen on your desk? I want to take your eye out.
I want a piece of you, Potter.
You know, I think I remember.
Want to see me make this pen disappear? You could pull a Joker on it. That's right. Batman, Dark Knight.
Did Dana Carvey do that?
Was yeah, Dana Carvey was Jimmy Stewart.
It's Jimmy Stewart, that's right.
Dana Carvey does an awesome Jimmy Stewart recollection.
And then they throw him out of the wheelchair and he stands up. He's like, you're not even a cripple. That's so awesome.
I'll have to YouTube it, yeah. Well, because, I mean, even at the end, remember, Potter still lives.
Potter never dies. He never gets his comeuppance.
He doesn't get it exactly because he and his type will always be out there. That's the whole thing.
He's still alive. That's why nobody gets him.
It's like, you know, well, I want to say Star Wars, but like Return of the Jedi, uh-huh. You know, when they truly defeat the Empire, it's like, that doesn't happen like that. There's always, the evil is always out there. You always have to fight it back.
Right.
But that's only one of the first things I have problems with Return of the Jedi, but that's not for him.
Well, and I think it's the idea, too, that destroying something isn't necessarily winning.
Right. Well, yeah. Exactly. And maybe it's some things can't be destroyed. He's indestructible. He's old. He will
but
not.
But by the end of the movie, who cares? You know what I mean?
Right.
Who cares? Because George knows he has so much more
that Mr. Potter will ever
have.
Well,
he wins by not destroying him. That's the whole thing. There is the other way.
He's the bigger man.
By living the better life.
Yeah, evil will always be out there.
Really, I see Potter as the victim in this film. Is it just me? Joke. I'm sorry.
Please support your argument. I would love to hear
it. Love to debate that one.
Well, I don't really think he has an angel following him. So.
I don't think it's the kind of angel we think he's.
Maybe a fallen angel.
remember in Ghost, those black things?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's waiting for
that's
him.
That's what's waiting for Potter.
That's waiting for Potter. Totally what's waiting for Potter.
Well, and then here, you know, is George's temptation scene.
Oh, absolutely.
He almost crumbles.
That's it. I mean, he is Satan. He does. Well, I'm not equating George Bailey to Jesus in any kind of way, but it is. I mean, he is tempting him.
Yeah.
It is, you know, the story of Faust.
Yep.
You know, will you? Here, I'll give you all the money you want.
I'll give you everything.
I'll give you,
sell
I'll give everything.
Your soul.
Just sell, essentially. And his soul is the building in
love.
Well,
and the thing is, is like, even if he did sell it, it's not necessarily meaning that George is a bad person because he looked out for himself. But that those aren't the kind of things that make him happy.
Right.
You know, knowing when he takes the martinis over to their house, that's one of the happiest moments you see him in the whole movie.
Yep.
You know, like there's a real joy in that for him and a worth.
Actually, this film is a good barometer to always see throughout your life for a self-reckoning and look at yourself and for standards. And just see, you know, what kind of person have I wound up to be?
Yeah,
watch It's a Wonderful Life and see which camp you've gone towards.
If you were in this position and this man, evil man had offered you the money to give up.
He addressed the bad guy.
Well, and that's the thing is that he knows what he's going to do. You know, he knows if he sells this guy is just going to, like, rape this town, you know?
Yeah.
Because he knows, like his father, he's the only thing standing between the town. And, I mean, literally he said, you know, Potter said during the Depression, it was you and me, and you helped everyone with the building loan, and I took the rest.
Oh, we've got some marriage.
Oh, this is, yeah, this is interesting structurally. I don't necessarily agree with this, but you hear the voices. I mean, I guess the voiceovers from things that have been heard over the day. And it's anachronistic to the whole rest of the film. You're hearing, like, parts of the film.
I still think that's, like, the most adorable thing in the entire world. Oh, yeah. And look at the moon. It's like, I don't want to go with you. And he's like, too bad.
But the moon's like, you got me. Nothing I can do about it.
The very resistant. It's sweating. It's actually trying to get away from him.
You're right. And remember, she's the one who did that. She made that. So that's her vision of him lassoing the moon.
That
he wants
moon.
To live up to.
Right. The moon is not being happy to be lassoed. The moon's like, no, yeah. You're not going to get me.
Aww.
Okay, that cut was weird.
Yeah, that cut was really weird.
Yeah, it was weird.
That was one of the weird cuts.
No wonder why they didn't win best editing. Oh.
What, were they pan over to the window?
What's that little string behind him? Is that the light?
Oh, what is that? It's hanging in the
middle
of
the noose. In front of him. It's a little noose.
It's a little noose.
The wife was getting a little depressed earlier.
That's right. It's symbolic.
It's when you need to hang your pinky.
Is it a light?
It's probably for a light.
Yeah, I guess it's for a light.
Well, there was something that was running down the room that was a rope that I thought was for hanging laundry or something.
You know what's interesting is how she tells him that she's pregnant. She doesn't say, I'm pregnant.
Because then you weren't allowed to say it for some reason.
Were you,
it's like
this
the whole standards
the
of my I Love Lucy. She was never allowed to say that she was pregnant.
I guess.
It was like, I'm expecting.
Well, there was the code. There was the Hays code, yeah.
Yeah.
And now we get a nice ellipse.
One day, when I'm pregnant, that's how I'm going to break the news.
George Lasso Stork. Look at her little baseball cap.
She's so freaking cute, I can't even stand it.
And now we're introduced to this. It's funny because
fixes it.
We only see that happen twice, maybe three times, but it feels so familiar. It's really interesting. I mean, you realize we're an hour 15 into this film. And this is still all prologue. It's amazing.
Oh, there's some back projection.
Oh, back projection.
Yeah,
oh.
Some bad green screen there.
Of course, Potter would be in charge of the draft board. What a.
Some older age makeup.
Still looks barely any older.
I like how they just, you know, talk about all the main characters, all the people in his life. And tied to everything else. And the thing is that this is how everyone saw the world.
Right.
You know, everyone went. That's real projection right there, I think.
And of course, back then, being in the army was a very, it meant you were a man.
Yeah,
you were ready
noble.
To fight for your country.
Exactly.
Noble, heroic.
And George was 4F because
glorified.
It was there.
Yeah, glory.
So he didn't get to leave town. He had to, as they say, he had to fight, you know, the Battle of Bedford Falls. So in a way, actually, what's interesting is that, based on what you're saying, in a way, he's an emasculated man.
Yeah,
he's never been able to live his dream.
He's never
like other men have been able to. Never got to war. Gone to college. Gone on an adventure. Gone traveling.
These are things that society tells you you're supposed to do in order to be a man.
Well, and to be a successful man as well.
Yeah. And that's another thing that's so great about this movie is it's sort of it's confronting you with that notion and saying, but is it really what it takes to be a man?
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, that is, in a way, that's part of the meta message.
That's
meta
part of
message.
The movie is like, no, actually, you can be a man without doing that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're an hour 15 in. Now we're on to the events of the day.
That's true. Hour 15, prologue.
To get up to speed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've all been entertained. We've followed it all along.
Also, the uncle doesn't really seem to age at all either, I will say.
And that's fine. I like that.
But he has a young soul.
Yeah. And everything's going to be laid out. Actually, I think they aged the cousins a little bit. Tilly's going to tell everyone in town.
So what's the bad news this guy has for him?
Oh, he's just a bank examiner.
Oh, this is... Okay, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, he's a bank examiner. And he's there to, you know, audit the books. It's like, okay, fine.
Bank examiner.
Eustace, that's right. That's his name.
Eustace.
Oh, how could I forget?
Useless?
Eustace.
Oh, but I'm bummed.
Hey, watch it. It's Eustace. Man, that guy is just not in the spirit yet.
He's a banker.
He's a bank examiner. Are you saying negative things about bankers there, Heidi?
I would never do such a thing.
He's such a cheery guy. And now this is the setup for all the bad that's about to happen. Oh.
And it just kills me, this scene. When I was a kid, I got so angry about this. Like, how can they let that happen?
Yeah. And, I mean, frankly, it's never rectified. I mean,
it's never rectified.
Nope. It's almost like, oh, bad cut.
Yeah.
And that's why I hated it so much, because I'm like, oh, they never get justice for it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, coming at it from as a kid, totally, I think I remember having the same feelings. Just like, wait a minute, it's going to be fixed.
Because everything's black and white when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Just like this film.
But then, of course, I mean, in real life, you don't always get justice for wrongs that happen.
That is true. And that's what becomes more appreciated as you grow older about that.
And it's just a mistake, though. But you know what? That's what I also like about this, because that's why it's so hard to swallow this scene when you're a kid.
It's just such a mistake.
Because it's just so unfair, and you're just like, how could this happen? But this is life. Mistakes happen every day, and just because they're unfair doesn't mean that they are going to suddenly be corrected, you know? Like, that's just the way... That's the way the world works.
Yeah.
And it's no one's fault. It's not the uncle's fault.
Well, it is his fault.
But it's not his
fault. Well, it is his fault, yeah.
It's just an accident.
But he didn't do it on purpose.
Oh, no, he didn't do it on purpose.
Dun, dun, dun.
But it is his responsibility. And I have to say, you know, when George gets mad at him, I mean, George is allowed to get mad at him for a little bit, and you can definitely see where it's going.
I mean, I would have gotten mad at him too, but he's kind of like a crotchety, not crotchety
he's
at all.
He's absent-minded.
He's like absent-minded, yeah.
He's always been absent-minded. He's the absent-minded and he's old, uncle.
And he obviously, I mean, already is in like a panic, you know,
Yeah, he's not a bad person. Oh, he's just absent-minded.
It's just an accident, you know, you're driving down the street, you're doing everything you need to do, and then, you know, you accidentally hit something. I mean, it's just the way...
Yeah,
the world works. It's not about blame,
right?
It's not about the bad things that happen. It's what you do with them when they happen,
right?
How you react,
exactly.
You carry a crow around on your shoulder
instead of a monkey on your back.
Oh, Thomas Mitchell is just such a great actor too.
Really, yeah, this is always tough for me to watch.
Oh, when he's giving her money.
No, when George realizes that the money's gone.
That happens in a second.
The panic of trying to find it, and George is just saying, backtrack. You think what you did. Think where you put it. And it gets real ugly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it definitely goes to his darker parts. Yeah. Glory Graham's just great. I just can't say it enough. I wish she'd had a bigger career. I need to see another Glory Graham film now.
Yeah. Go see Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Ado Annie,
she
right?
She was Ado Annie.
Ado Annie?
Yep.
Okay.
A girl who can't say no.
Oh, bad cut again. Jeez, what's going on?
Yeah, that was a bad cut.
Oh, there's lipstick.
Oh.
George. It took her that long to get out of town?
She may have been come and gone. We just, you know, don't follow her story.
That's true.
I have a feeling she has come and gone a few times with some not so nice people, probably, and that's why she's in this money state she's in.
Right.
The bank examiner's here.
Oh my
this guy's
God.
Having a bad day.
I just want to wrap my hands around that little old man and just tell him it's all okay. He just looks like he's going to explode.
Look at Tilly. She's like, oh, no, not again. Not this time. Yeah, and here we go. This is where it all starts. And of course, the bank examiner is there.
Of course.
Yep. When it rains, it pours.
It always
happens. And this would
like
lead
that.
A man to contemplate suicide. I mean, his world's about to crumble. Yeah, he starts off, you know, trying to be level-headed and
then panic.
Yeah.
Well, he's not the panic yet, yeah.
I'm saying, and then it gets to panic.
Yeah. Now we're getting into it. Look at that.
Oh, boy.
You know, I've never seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Is that?
Really?
Yeah, is that another great
I haven't seen it since I was a teenager. So yeah, but it is. Yeah, it's one of the classic ones. Well, that's where he does the filibuster, and he's just...
Because how exhausted he is right here and how ragged, it makes me think of the scene in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington where he's like that.
And he had done that was like at least, I think that was in the early 30s.
Yeah.
So like, that was, you know...
It was like late 30s, I think.
Was it?
Yeah.
So at least it was at least
that
6,
was Barbara
7 years
Stanwyck,
before.
Right? So I think that was 39.
Is that... Was that Meet John Doe?
Oh.
Yeah. Which was with Gary Cooper. Okay, oh, but sorry. Capra made great films. But yeah, that's definitely one of them.
Wow, look at this.
Yeah. Oh, there's a dog and there's animals. Look at all that.
Wow.
And there's the squirrel that climbs on top of him. And we get to meet his children in an instant.
Oh, and we meet them in a sad part because his dad is low.
But we get to meet them all and get to know who they are.
He's got nothing left right now.
Except his family.
Yeah.
He can't let him in at the moment, though. He's isolated in his despair.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. That's so sweet how his kids all say bless you at the same time.
She knows something's up, man.
Oh, yeah.
Incongruous, the happiest time of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Christmas time, a lot of people commit suicide during that time because they feel like their life isn't good enough for the ideal.
Mm-hmm.
The day comes where everyone has to be happy and has to be wonderful and magic.
And your life has to be perfect. And if it's not, and, you know, you have to have family and
it's
everything
a mirror,
like that.
And you look into it and you see what you're lacking.
Yeah.
And she knows something's wrong. Nice focus on her eyes, too.
He's doing great stuff here.
Tinsel.
Look at this.
Yeah. I don't know
really
if they
working
did.
It.
I think they did something to his eyes with the makeup there because he looks
like darker.
He's got serious
dark
circles under his eyes.
Oh, yeah.
He's ragged. They gave him ragged makeup.
He's cute. At least the kid's got manners.
There's a bad cut right there.
They're weird cuts. I mean, that they cut on. I mean, I know they're cutting on action. It's interesting. I guess it's of the time.
It makes me wonder if it's that was inherent in the original or the print they're using had problems.
That looked like it was intentional. Mm. I mean, anyway, going to editing principles, it's a bit of a different principle that I guess we've adopted since or, you know, that came into adoption later, but I don't know. Or it's just what they had. They had to go with it. And it's like, we're just going. It's bad, but it's not super bad.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the Dark George.
This is way Dark George. And
that's like a kick in his groin.
Now,
right
that's
there.
The second time, exactly.
You're never going to get a break. You're always going to be held down.
But they never fix it.
The point is that the third time he does it, he loves it. He loves it. That's a fact.
He embraces it.
Part of his life. And that's the point.
Yeah.
The first time was discovery. The second time was I reject it. The third time is I accept it. I embrace it. Oh, there she is.
Well, and the third time, it's something you can rely on. It's his, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes, yeah. Well, it's because of what he came from. It having it there proves that he's got his life back, his old life back.
Exactly. And there's Zuzu's petals. Back when I was in D.C., I know I didn't make the screening, but someone did a screening of It's a Wonderful Life at one of the local theaters, and they actually got the woman who played Zuzu to come out and talk. And apparently that's what she does. She does lots of appearances. She's done for years. She's done appearances, yeah. And she sought out.
Lived off that the rest of her life.
Well, she's freaking adorable.
I'm sure she still is. I love that. Mm-hmm. Whenever the phone rings, when I'm at my parents' house and the phone rings, I yell, telephone. Sometimes they get it. Sometimes they don't.
Sideways anger. Takes it out on the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Or the teacher, yeah.
Yeah.
Oof, man.
Wow.
That is really courageous on Jimmy Stewart's part.
You know, I
to do it that way.
In contemporary American cinema, have we ever seen anyone get so angry and still not be so completely super pissed at them? Or ever seen them get angry like this?
Yeah, only Jimmy Stewart could get away with something like that.
Yeah, I mean, holy crap.
Oh.
Well, I mean, in a way, you may. How do I explain this? What he's doing is behavior that a lot of people either do or wish they would do. And in a way, by doing this, I mean theater slash film is catharsis. So in a way, him doing it is a catharsis. I mean, he does what other people wouldn't. Oh, man, he destroys the model.
It's over. But, you know, with that prologue, I mean, that what, hour and 15 minutes? Makes this scene work
much more impactful. Well, yeah, exactly. Because you know he's not like this.
You understand it thoroughly. You don't. You're not against him.
Yeah.
You understand it with that hour and 15 minutes we went through.
Absolutely. You know that if he's here, it's really bad, and he's trying to control something that he can.
Yeah. Hey, I give him props for holding it together this long.
Oh yeah.
I'm serious, though. I mean,
you're right.
I've seen a lot of unwound people who've behaved in a lot more angry, violent ways than this.
Oh, yeah, they would have got it flipped.
And
out
also,
earlier,
as soon
yeah.
as they entered the house, rather than as long as it took them.
Yeah. Oh.
He tried.
Oh, yes.
Is his tie ripped? It looks like his tie is frayed.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it is.
It is.
That's an old tie.
And that's it. She starts crying, and that's it. Now, this kind of surprised me. Why does Mary turns on him like this, and that's like the last drop for
her? I don't think it's turning on him.
It's because
it has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with the kids.
The children. That's what I was just going to say.
No, I understand. But from him, he's like, I need something, and he totally doesn't get it at that moment.
But he's not giving her anything to go on so she can help him.
Oh, I know. But he's totally stuck in a maelstrom right now. You know, he's like, you can't even see outside of it. That's the whole thing.
So she's just trying to take care of her children.
He threatened, you know, when a mother becomes a mother, she comes like a lioness protecting her kids.
Right. But at that moment is she basically separated himself from him, and he's just like, I gotta go another way now.
Yeah. Because he was out of line. That's why.
Yeah, he's out of line.
You can only be so patient. You can only be so flexible.
Right.
If someone crosses that line, you need to tell them they crossed that line and tell them to go take a walk.
Yeah.
The more I watch this, Laura, the more I'd have to say it'd be hard to beat this Jimmy Stewart performance.
Yeah, I agree. It just goes from
as far as at the beginning when we were saying, do you think this is Jimmy Stewart's best?
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, and like we were saying also, is that I think it's because of the range of emotions and situations that the character goes through, it's hard to beat that.
What's exactly going, I mean, going from, the, I mean, everything that he had before to going to the dark place we just really saw him go to.
Yeah.
And even going to here in the desperation and the journey that, I mean, he goes on.
And again, going from young to old.
Yeah.
Well, or older.
Well, yeah.
Middle age.
I mean, at least, well, we're talking about, yeah, you know, like we talked about 20 years.
Yeah.
There's Napoleon again, only this time in black, because before he was in white.
And he's even smaller in this shot, isn't he, than the other time he was at the, sitting there? He looks smaller to me.
Well, he's low in the chair again.
But I'm saying he's smaller than the first time when he was here to emphasize his smallness in the story.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Right, I never noticed, but I always noticed before when he was low in the chair, but this time I completely not noticed, but you're right. He's still low and there's that whole thing.
He's disappearing. He's becoming very small.
Where's the skull? Skull's not there. And he's trying, and he's trying to deal with Potter. He's trying to deal with the evil materialistic way to try and get him out of it.
Well, Potter guts him right now.
Oh yeah,
what he's doing right here, he doesn't leave him with anything. He picks him clean.
Yeah.
Boom.
Now, we were talking about Christmas Carol before. This is the difference with Christmas Carol. The Christmas Carol definitely was the fantasy, you know, what your life would be like, which this definitely plays on. But this plays on the whole thing of he actually, you know, given the choice that if you killed yourself or that you know, that you didn't exist, it plays on that. I mean, I'm just wondering where that might have.
Well,
I mean, that was coming from,
ghost
yeah.
Ghost.
Yeah.
In Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Because in Christmas Carol, didn't Scrooge see that he died somehow? Or did he?
And that he's dead and that nobody cares that he's dead.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the...
the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas present, and the ghost of Christmas future.
That's the one where he's dead and nobody cares. And like that his nephew's, you know, wife is like laughing about him being dead. And then there's like the street people who've like stolen all of his things and are talking bad about him.
Yeah.
And may I say this is the scene?
Yeah.
This is a look at the scene, how he...
This is it. It's one, one shot.
Holding the shot.
And of course, this plays. Actually, this is like maybe why I didn't do well, is because this plays heavily on irony, this film, which a lot of films, I think, at that time didn't necessarily do. Because this scene is all about irony.
God, this is beautifully played on his part.
Yeah. He's really falling apart.
He's desperate.
Yeah.
Really.
I mean, this performance would stand up to any performance nowadays, I think.
Fucking Sheldon Leonard is great. Mr. Martini.
Oh, and the final insult.
Well, here's the irony, exactly. I want to pay for my drink.
He's my best friend. Get out. Sweet.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
He's no welcome here.
Sorry. Okay, that was a little obvious.
He's drunk.
Well, that's true. You're right. I'll give him a mulligan on that one. I always liked that music cue there. Once he's crashed into the tree, then that music cue starts. Yeah. Then there's this guy.
Like a supernatural.
Yeah. Well, because it's unique to this film. You haven't heard the cues used like that up until now. And now the music changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it becomes very eerie and haunting.
Everything. I mean,
heightened.
Okay, so we were 115. Now we're like at 138, 140. Something. Like we spent about 25 minutes here, just everything going from bad to worse. And now we get into the whole magical part into it. Of
nice
it.
Backlighting. I like that. Oh, yeah. On the tree.
And that's all.
Stage.
That's a stage, yeah.
This whole thing right here?
That's a stage.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That oh, yeah.
That is a really convincing set.
Yeah. But they're able to do it because it's black and white.
Right.
That's optical snow. That's not. And that's a water tank with optical snow.
Boy.
But a good-looking water tank.
Crazy eyes.
And there all we have is Clarence. He's yeah. there. And he's just... And it's they just plop him in there. Film-wise, very interesting.
Yeah, no magical appearance or something.
No, it's just
yeah.
he's there.
There he
he's
is.
Been waiting.
And then, boom.
That was looped. His mouth was closed in that shot.
Nice dive.
See, now,
but you see, even if he jumped off the bridge, he wouldn't have died.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, if he jumped proving. Off the bridge, he would have just had to not swim and let himself drown.
Right. Clearly, the bridge wasn't high enough, so it wasn't a good plan.
Yeah.
That's a nice optical effect.
Mm-hmm, for the flashlight?
You with the flashlight, yeah. They're like, oh, get this stuff out of our face. This character actor who plays this guy, he's awesome. Because he sees his... I always wondered what he was looking at. I always figured that maybe he saw like the beginnings of his wings, but the wings weren't in or something like that. I don't know.
Or maybe he's glowing.
I don't know. Just something weird.
Maybe that's all he sees is something weird.
Was it because they were playing the angel music while he was staring at him?
Yeah.
It must have been something.
He can't even spit.
That's a classic comedy right there.
I like the little music cue of Twinkle Twinkle Little mm-hmm. Star. I mean, now the whole how the movie is treating itself musically.
Yeah.
And with the comedy, I mean, essentially the setup and everything is all different. What's a little different?
Do we know this actor from any other films who plays Clarence?
I don't remember his name.
I'm sure he's been in other things.
Yeah.
I love it. That guy totally believes.
He's like, oh, I am. So...
No. So you have to, judging on what he's wearing, you have to think that he's from the 1700s.
Right.
Like that's when he died. And well,
no.
He's working to become an angel. Because he said, I've been waiting for 200 years for my wings. At the beginning of the movie, Clarence says, "For 200 years, I've been waiting to get."
I guess so. So why was he thinking that Mark Twain was still writing a book by Tom Sawyer?
And does he say that at the beginning?
In
well,
heaven,
he just said it. Mark Twain's writing his new book.
And I always just assumed that meant in heaven.
Was Tom Sawyer's last
that
book?
Mark Twain is dead and he's in heaven and he's writing a new book?
Oh yeah, I never took it that way because Mark Twain's last book was Mysterious Stranger. I think Tom Sawyer was earlier in his career. That's why I was confused.
Oh.
I thought it was like literally, you know, Clarence, that's when he died. And,
maybe
but
the
I didn't
movie
catch
just
it.
Sort of does it a little bit inconsistent in its declaration.
Well, I think that's why the guy in the room gives him the funny look, like Mark Twain's dead. Why would you say that?
Right.
Interesting that we're shooting through the clothesline, which divides both of them.
Yes.
Like yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and George is down low and Clarence is up high.
Yes, exactly. It's what separates them. They're separated. It separates their thoughts. One's thinking clearly. One is not.
Bub.
Yeah, Bub.
Bub. Oh.
Oh.
Don't say that.
So Clarence really doesn't care about helping him. He just wants his wings.
I know. I was just going to say, it's all about his wings.
Not very altruistic in Clarence.
Well, I like that, though, that, you know.
That he doesn't really care about George?
No. No, it's not that. It just makes angels more complicated. It doesn't mean that they're, like, just there just to do something good. Like, he has his own soul, too, and he has himself to think of.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, he certainly is clever, Clarence is.
Clever Clarence, clever Clarence.
Well, and I think this movie's all about life isn't just black and white. It's all the grays that matter. And right. If the angel was just a clear white, then it wouldn't be as well written.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then he gets an idea. He's like, ooh, I'm not that shabby.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Oh, he just consulted. That's right. We didn't hear that part of the conversation.
Consulted like, with God. Is that okay? Or whatever other
or
entities.
His superiors.
I think it was St. Peter. I think they may have mentioned
maybe St. Peter, yeah.
And then boom, now we're into the dark universe. This is like the same universe, you know, like Star Trek, you know, with the Spock with the beard.
I can hear.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's how we know we're there.
That's right. Yep. And you need a shave. That's because it doesn't snow in this universe, George.
I don't know if I can.
Yeah. That's a yes, but a no.
Right. You know, it always kind of bugged me how slightly belligerent George was with Clarence. He is.
Well, at this point, he does
not believe him. Yeah, he thinks he's just some nut job.
I mean, he's actually being very kind because he's not throwing him out in the snow and saying you're an insane man.
But I mean, George, we've seen George be able to be kinder than this, and he's just like.
Well, this is still within the same night
him
at the darkest time of his life. Yeah. Nothing's reconciled itself. He's still
in the
pit of despair.
Still.
Okay, all right. I can still be a little angry with him. It's okay.
Oh, you can have your own feelings? Is that how this works?
No, I'm not allowed to have my own feelings. I learned that a long time ago. Yeah, maybe he is a little drunk. I just think it's an interesting choice. I don't know.
Yeah, well, Stewart's definitely playing it for unsympathetic.
Yeah, and I think that I think that's
a courageous choice.
Actually. Oh, it is definitely.
I think it works because
it totally works. You think it works because
of where George is at for the payoff to be as big as it is by the end of the film.
Yes. More tough guy talk.
You want a drink or don't?
And they're playing Boogie Woogie, so you know the place is bad. You know, it's dark universe. Totally dark universe.
It's loose.
Clarence. I like his bow tie.
Those are bushy eyebrows.
Oh, yeah. Eyebrows that dart off of his face.
Now, has anyone ever had a flaming rum punch?
I want one.
It sounds tasty. Ooh, mulled wine.
Oh, that sounds so good right now. I make that every year.
Mulled wine?
Mm-hmm. I love it. My grandma called it glue wine, and there's a recipe for it like that.
A convincer?
Oh, see, even in his darkest hour, he's worried about others.
Someone else.
I think he's still drunk.
Yeah, no, I do.
No, yeah. I think he's still drunk, but he's still worried
George.
About others.
Oh,
yeah. He's still George.
But there is, he, yeah, because it's, yeah. Oh, there's the bell.
Yeah.
There was two angels right there. Here you go.
I love it. He kind of believes it a little bit. Yeah,
you
Nick's
two
got
are
it.
Screwy.
Nick? Alternate universe Nick? No
yeah,
way.
He believes it a little bit. He's
no.
like, maybe a bell. He's,
no, alternate universe Nick believes in nothing except for money.
Look, he's almost smiling.
He is wearing a bow tie. That's polka dotted just like Clarence's. Maybe Nick is an angel in disguise.
Look at that guy look over his shoulder.
The guy's looking and...
He's like, you got a bunch of weirdos. You little wackadoo.
These two are screwy.
See? He's got the polka dot bow tie. Uh-oh. And here we have the payoff from the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And we start having payoffs. All the payoffs are coming.
Oh, God.
He's got, like, newspaper for a shirt.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, his newspaper.
Oh. Didn't even realize that.
It's probably to keep warm. See?
It's keeping him warm. Wow. Man, H.B. Warner sure dirties up well. Look at that.
Nicks.
You know, I know this is really crewish, geekish type of thing, but I can imagine when they were shooting this, you know, for when it was Martinis, they had one set of extras and everything, and then was Nicks. Okay, we need a whole bunch of other people.
Right.
Really rough looking.
Yeah, like floozy looking ladies.
Exactly.
Although their outfits and their hair are way cuter. Nah, those floozies.
And now we have the mysterious music again. I like how, you know, basically in this universe, well, compared to the other universe, there was snow. And then now that this is this, you know, the dark universe, there's no snow at all.
It's all still.
It's all very still. There's nothing in the air.
It's like it's lifeless.
It's like still and dead. Yeah, it is lifeless.
Stuck in time.
Well, snow is like rain. You know, going back to the whole rain thing,
right,
it is
yeah.
precipitation. It is a sign of life.
The petals.
Oh. Yep.
All right, I'm going to diverge for a second and talk about Family Man. Which kind of which kind of does the same thing as
this. Yeah, it does the same thing.
I don't
think
it's as good a film, but I think, I mean, I like Family Man in a very strange way because I think it has its merits too. There's a great shot, actually, of the snow falling. But it kind of covers the same territory in a much more modern, materialistic way. But in reverse.
You're screwing.
You know?
You're screwing.
He essentially, in a way, Nick Cage's character comes from the sterile universe.
Right.
And finds this warmth, the warmth of George Bailey's universe. And then he has to go back to his sterile universe.
Right.
And become human in a way. And there goes the boogie-woogie again. It's funny, whenever I used to drive to New York from Montreal, there was a Pottersville along the way, so my parents was always like, look, it's Pottersville.
Everything's all hot nightclubs and billiards.
Decadent. We stopped there one time, it was just like this, yes. I love how the music changes.
with each one.
It's right. It's like gorgeous. 20 gorgeous girls. Burlesque you.
The house of burlesque.
Keep off the grass. Dime a dance, man. He's in hell. I mean, this, in a way, this is his hell.
Yeah.
He thought he was in hell. This is much worse.
She's
there's Violet.
Getting arrested. She's got no stability in her life. He is her stability.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, he's the one who keeps Potter, you know, he's the one who's kept Potter back.
Yeah.
Kept Potter from sweeping through the town like this.
Yeah.
There you go, 320 Sycamore. And without that, there's, you know, he's the check.
Yeah.
In a cosmic sense, he's very necessary.
He's freaking.
Yeah.
The crazy eyes.
And
he does that so well. The crazy eyes.
George's sensational striptease.
Is that John Ford's one of the actors? He's in The Searchers?
I don't know.
And I think it is. He's a very famous character actor.
Now, it's really interesting how George just does not piece it together. He's just the cognitive dissonance that's going on. It's like, this is my house. How can this, where is everyone? How could this be?
Well, it's pretty incredible.
Out there. If this happened to me, I don't think I'd buy it either. Well, I probably would because I have a ridiculous imagination. But and I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is just like, it's a wonderful life. It all makes so much sense.
La, la, la. I mean, you have Clarence. You mean, Clarence told him what it was going to be like. And
right, but just some crazy old man comes up to you and is like, hey, I'm an angel and I'm going to change your world. I mean, it's kind of hard to buy.
At this point, I'd buy it because the house is empty. It's like, how did this, I mean, buy something, at least accept that something is wrong. And the lighting. The lighting would have tipped me off, too.
Yeah,
and there's no snow. The so lighting, definitely, I would have known.
The lighting is much darker. Yes, that's great silhouetted lighting. Look at that. Mm. You don't see any faces, or barely. Nice. I can't even imagine this colorized. Nope. That does not exist in my mind. Now, what's interesting is this universe has rules. And clearly Clarence is playing by the rules. In other words, he can't just wish him anywhere or do anything. There are rules going on. And he has to bite the cop's hand and then he can disappear. But the rules of this universe are still playing themselves out. See, Ernie accepts it.
I don't think he accepts it. I think he's trying to not accept it, actually.
Right. Now, this is the most, I mean, this for me is the most painful thing in the movie.
Oh, she's so severe, so cold. This is like my nightmare to have your mother
not even recognize you.
And oh my! I mean,
it's so basic. Strangers.
Hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. And here comes the best shot of the film. There you go.
That's tight.
Yep. And he looks right at the camera. And then they cut. Mm. Why did they cut?
'Cause it breaks the fourth wall a little too much.
I wanted them to just go right by, but it's okay. I don't like that cut. I love that shot. Now, I haven't read Tom Sawyer in a long time, but is there anything in Tom Sawyer? Is there any symbolism in Tom Sawyer that we can bring to this film?
Oh, I'm sure it's all about symbolism. It's all about... Tom Sawyer is all about growing up and taking responsibility. You know?
Like the trying to escape responsibility.
That's what he's doing the whole time, but yeah. In the end, he decides he wants to be... what is, like the ants that he lives with or whatever. Like mm-hmm. that he ends up coming back from this adventure he went on.
Right.
Right. And, so in a way... Actually, you know what? Here you go. This is his adventure. He finally got to go away.
Hmm. That's a good thought.
This is George's adventure. It's not what he thought it was going
to
be.
Well, and the lesson of Tom Sawyer is that, because Tom's always trying to get out of doing the right thing and out of doing work because he just wants to have fun and have freedom, you know?
Right.
And he discovers in the end that, you know, family and obligations and certain things like that are kind of... are worth it, that like mattering to people is more worth it.
Right. So in that way, Tom Sawyer ties into what Clarence is trying to tell George's journey, his journey is.
You know, it's so funny how they have it in the alternate universe where his brother would have died if not for George. And I can think of in my own life, there was a moment when I was a kid and I was drowning in a pool, and I don't know if I would have lived if my brother hadn't alerted my mom immediately and saved me.
I almost drowned in a pool, too, when I was little.
Yeah.
And my mom saw me through. She was, like, sitting inside and saw me through the window, saw me and, like, my hair on the top of the pool.
Yeah. Wow. That's weird.
Oh, I hate this. It's playing up the stereotype that all librarians are like sad, lonely spinsters.
Yeah.
Pathetic and
bottled
up.
But I think in certain times, yes, you know.
I don't know.
The point is she's not a floozy. But the point is that the only person for her was George.
Yep, she never would have married anybody else. She never would have been with anybody else.
That's the point. Yeah. That the only person for her was George, and so there was no one for her.
Yep.
Yeah.
And even when she was young, she knew that George was for her. So George never existed. Of course, if George was for her, why didn't she recognize that now?
Because he never existed.
True.
Well, because he's a scary stranger.
And he's not George Bailey.
And he doesn't really... Exactly, he's not George Bailey. He doesn't really exist in this universe. Yeah. He's an intruder. I mean, he's there.
He's a ghost.
In a way, he is. Physical. He can punch a cop. And I love this. Bert just shoots down the street. Everybody duck! I mean, it's just so horrible. And we've been in this universe for about 20 minutes. That's it.
Oh.
Yeah. We were in good universe 25 minutes and 20 minutes here. Nice shorthand. We have the snow still. Snow starts, and we know we're back.
He's back.
Now, interestingly enough, Clarence brought him back to the moment where he made the decision.
Right.
So the whole thing in the, whatever, with the guy in the little cabin never happened.
Right.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
and now he couldn't be happier.
All the things that are horrible and awful.
Everything
means so much now.
Yeah,
it's real. It's his life.
Yeah,
he realizes that
he's part of the gift of life.
Yeah.
The Bells of St. Mary's as opposed to Girls, Girls, Girls. It's like the total opposite.
Everything's all right now.
I know this reflects also at the beginning. Remember when we saw the different buildings? Yeah, it was all set up and now we're going by all of them. Oh. There's the henchman. there's the sheriff.
And what a nut.
These are all such great character actors, especially the sheriff. He's just like, he's there. You know he, you know him already. This is his first line in the film.
Yeah, there's a lot of history that that actor brought to his role there.
Right, bingo.
You believe that he's been the sheriff of this town for a long time. Yeah. He knows George Bailey, and he's sorry that this has to happen.
Yep. But that's the way it's been with all the characters. They've been instantly introduced them, and you knew. And you see, there. Yeah. There you go. And now he loves it. It's part of his life. He accepts it all.
Hmm. He takes a picture.
Yeah.
Oh.
And in a way, I know it's awful to say, but because he was so bad to the kids, it's so great seeing him being so nice to them now.
Yeah,
because
makes,
you
yeah,
see
closure.
how he truly feels about them. You see the contrast.
That's true, because you never see the kids before the moment when he's at his lowest.
Exactly. You've only seen him and the kids at the lowest. Now you've seen, yeah. I like how they're hanging off his back. Oh, that's Zuzu, that's right.
Aww.
He's like, I'm hanging on, I'm not going to let go. Okay, now I'll let go. Those are some good child actors, let me tell you.
Yeah, they're great.
They are natural.
They're staying with it. That's the whole thing. It's not like, what's going on?
And I love it. Potter said, why don't you go get that money, you know, from all those, I forget how he phrases it, but why don't you go ask all those, like, you know, nobodies that you've been helping to help you. And guess
and
what?
They do.
Guess what, Potter?
There's the guy from the building and loan. You're seeing all the characters
this
again.
This is the type of humanity you want to be reminded of.
Yep.
Yeah, that's why this movie is so perfect for the holidays.
What, Frank Capra was great. Oh, I love the over the Christmas tree shoulder shot. Yeah. There's Mr. Martini. Oh, aww. Let me just say this before the party gets going. I really have a problem with Mary saying, Mr. Martini, let's have some wine. It's like, okay, why does Mr. Martini have to get the wine? Mary,
he's the bartender.
It's in your house. You can serve the wine. Mr. Gower.
That's a great line.
Yeah. And we've seen her in only two scenes. There you go. I mean, that's the whole thing. You had such great character actors who were able to nail their parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mary and like Mary's just like see.
He's a good guy.
See, you have nothing to worry about. Now what's up with that?
Put him to work, Mary.
Man,
well maybe he brought some wine. We don't know the backstory.
Okay.
Well, he's the bartender. It's his job. He's the expert.
That's right. Yeah.
One lazy hostess.
And even the
bank
cops,
examiner.
The
he's
bank
like, yeah.
Examiner.
Yeah, if you can't beat him, join him.
And then he starts singing, yeah. And there's the sheriff. He's just like, yeah, screw it.
This guy can't wait to put his money
in. That's Beulah Bondi up in front. There's Eustace. Now, in my fantasy of how this film was made, this was the last scene they shot.
Yeah.
That's my fantasy.
But of course.
It may not be true, but in my fantasy it is. So that way they ended the film on this note.
That's what the whole movie's about, right there.
The richest man in town. Yep. Yep.
No man is a failure who has friends.
Thanks for the wings. See, Clarence.
It was all about him and his wings.
He achieved his objective. He got his wings by helping George. See, even Zuzu says it.
That's the voice my grandma always did when she said it, actually. She did it in the little girl voice.
That's a nice shot across all those characters that we've seen in the film. It's great.
She doesn't know the words. She's like making them up.
She's trying. Yeah, that's right.
Back at the bell, the Liberty Bell.
Liberty Films Bell. There we go.
Yay.
Oh, we get some credits at the end. There we go. Ernie was Frank Phelan. Burt was Ward Bond.
But I can't.
Yeah, please don't. Sam Wainwright, Frank Albertson, Harry Bailey, Pa Bailey, Cousin Tilly, Cousin Eustace. They were cousins. Mr. Martini, Mrs. Martini. So little George was Bobby Anderson.
Potter's bodyguard.
Bobby Anderson.
Yes,
Frank Hagney.
Frank Hagney, you did an awesome job. There we go. Zuzu was Carolyn Grimes. Yep.
Aww. Yay.
You got to be pretty cold not to be touched by that movie.
Truly is.
I definitely had a tear or two right there at the end, and I gracefully wiped them away.
You did that very well with the Kleenex.
What a journey for Jimmy Stewart's, character. I mean, for all the things to play. He just played everything a person can in that movie.
Yeah, he went through pretty much everything you can go through.
Euphoric
yeah.
joy, to panic, to fear, to...
attempt suicide, insolence. To attempted suicide.
Yeah.
He almost did it.
Man, what a role.
Yeah.
I just remember, if my grandfather was here watching this movie with us, this is what he would say. He'd be, Heidi, they don't make movies like that anymore. Why can't they make movies like that?
Yeah.
Well, I think movies like this come, they happen every once in a while. That's a testament to the strength of it is how good it is. It is a classic because I don't want to use it loosely, but it is classic. It just has that power. And it stays.
It's also about something that's so universal that will never go out of style, which is core issues of life that everyone comes up against and has to travel through.
Yeah.
What's really meaningful in their life and the way they see it and what's important.
Yeah.
Yeah, perception versus reality of what you think will make you happy and what actually makes you happy.
Right.
And also your effect on others. And how closely knit we can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, on that note, I hope everyone out there has a very Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
To us all.
That's right. I hope wherever you are, perhaps, there's just a little bit of snow, unless you're in Southern California. Just a little bit of snow for your Christmas time. So, on that note, this has been Sarah Stolpierre and
Tim McMillan
and
Laura Thompson
and
Heidi Hilliker.
Wishing you a happy Christmas and see you next time on Filmgrog. Bye.